started. Thank you all for coming again for the purposes of the tape. My name's Molly Davis, and welcome to Courage Matters here in Holden Village, September of 2010. So we've talked so far about courage and contentment, and today we're going to talk about grace. You know, the older I get, the more grace I think matters to me. And so I'm going to start right off by throwing this out to you. What does grace mean to you? How would you, if somebody came up to you and said, "I, you know, I've never heard this word grace before. What does it mean?" What would you say?
I'm sure there's a multitude of different definitions, but something happened here when we first got here. We made the fatal mistake of trying to hike into Mimich Lake at our age. That's 18 miles. And we started out in snow. We hiked into rain. We had a great leader who did a good job keeping us together. But when we got into town, that man had helped set up our rooms. We got our gear in our rooms, arranged the cafeteria to have dinner for us. And one of the engineers here, Chris Schultz, came out in a golf cart looking for us. I think that's a pretty good definition in a short period of time.
It is great. That is wonderful. Okay.
Half of what he said is true.
Were you the leader?
I want to give credit to Barb Lance, actually, for half of that. But be that as
well. Well, I wasn't aware that you were the leader.
Smart aleck.
It was really me.
I think grace is giving someone the benefit of the doubt and not having to be right. Just, it wasn't important. The relationship was more important than being right.
That's a gift.
The benefit of the doubt, and it's a gift. All right, two more. Somebody comes up and says, what is grace? What does that mean?
Piling on goodness.
Piling on goodness. Love that. That's wonderful. We're talking about what is grace. If somebody came up to you, so we'll throw this right out to you guys that just walked in. If somebody came up and said, I just came across this word that I've never heard before, and it's the word grace, what would you say that meant?
I think a free gift. Everything is free and available. That's grace.
Okay.
My cousin's wife, who is grace.
There you go. We have a little grace. We have a little, the teacher's grace. It's one of my favorite names, actually. One more. Anybody else have a definition of grace?
Up until my introduction to Lutheranism, I mean, I'm starting to see it as this pocket of beauty that allows you a cushiony landing.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that, you know, it was something you said before a meal.
Okay. And what's interesting about grace, and I'm certainly not an expert in the theology of grace, just my own experience of it, grace is something we do, it's something we experience. It happens verbally, it happens emotionally. A couple more questions. A couple more examples, a recent example, and yours was wonderful, a recent example of experiencing grace. Maybe something this week that happened to you.
My first day to open the laundry at 6 a.m., I was kind of nervous about being there all by myself. It was just my third day here and doing everything that was needed to be done. And when I walked in that morning, Ashley, the lead person, had a note that said, "You are great. I have done this and this and this and this the night before." So, kind of paving the way.
Yeah, they went before you.
I told her I wanted to adopt her.
That
was a real gift.
Yeah. Okay. One more. Yes.
The first time stepping up the bus here at Holden and just having these beaming faces and kind of cheering crowds for doing nothing. You know, but just stepping off and people kind of rejoicing simply because you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me ask you this question. Who do you extend more grace to? Other people or yourself? What do you think when I say that?
Other people.
You know, ideally, we probably would have a balance. Why do we give more grace to other people than we give to ourselves?
We're hard on ourselves, critical of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts about that?
Undeserving.
And what would it be, how would our life, I don't want to put that out. How would life change if we gave ourselves more grace? How do you think life would change if we gave ourselves more grace?
If you're less anxious and less stressed.
Okay. And if we were less anxious and less stressed, then what would be true?
We're more at peace.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd extend more grace.
We'd extend more grace.
So it'd get larger.
Yeah. Okay. So here's we've heard some different ideas about grace, and so for the purposes of today, let me just tell you what comes to mind for me. And one of the things is that I think that grace is often a choice. And it's a choice to extend goodness in the midst of an imperfect world. The choice to extend goodness in the midst of an imperfect world. And that would also, to me, suggest that it's the choice to accept goodness in the midst of an imperfect world. So really, it's about experiencing goodness. So who here has a perfect life? You know, none of us do. We don't. Life is imperfect. We're imperfect. I think I maybe mentioned, I don't know if I mentioned this yesterday, but I recently read a book by Jeanine Roth, who just came out with a book called Women, Food, and God, I think is her newest book. But this one was called Feeding the Hungry Heart. And in it, she presents this option to consider when we find ourselves filled with anxiety because we aren't where we think we should be, we're not who we think we should be, we haven't accomplished what we think we should have. So when we haven't accomplished our goals, haven't mastered recovery, marriage, weight, our money, our job, whatever it is, okay, so when we see that imperfection, she says, and I want to make sure I get this right, she said, what if who you are, where you've been, what you've done or not done is perfect? What if that was perfect, which doesn't mean that we're not flawed, doesn't mean that the world isn't flawed. But here's how I think it should be. I did this yesterday. Here's how I think I should be. Here's how I am. And there's this conflict like this. And as soon as we go, here's who I am, the conflict goes away. And Steph, I mentioned to you, I loved your offering last night on minding the gap. And what I thought about today is that grace fills in the gap between who we are and who we'd like to be, between what's better and how things really are. Grace is really what fills in that gap. And so the anxiety or lack of contentment comes from this. And as soon as we can drop that down and really just live in what is true, we begin to relax. We're really living in grace. And the truth is, yesterday we talked about the fact that you experience contentment in moments. I believe we experience grace in moments. And hopefully what we're able to do is string those moments of grace together. Yeah, one after the other. And oftentimes I think it's hard for us to live in the moment because what? We're too busy, we're thinking about what's ahead, we're distracted, and it's really hard to miss those moments when we're distracted. And it's tough for us to extend or accept goodness if we're always wishing that things were better, different, slower, quicker. I have this quote, and it's from the Tao Te Ching, so it's Lao Tzu, attributed to Lao Tzu. Be content with what you have. Rejoice in the way things are. When you realize there is nothing lacking, the whole world belongs to you. And I think that has a lot to do with contentment, but I think it has a lot to do with grace. Let me read that one more time. Be content with what you have. Rejoice in the way things are. When you realize there is nothing lacking, the whole world belongs to you. I'd like to start out with an exercise tonight, which means you all need paper and pencil. So if you don't have some, tomorrow I'll get you guys some writing utensils. Who else needs paper? Anybody else need it over here? Say too, it feels to me like grace is you all being here. We have a lot of choices of what you can do, so thank you for just being here and talking about this stuff. All right, so here's what I'd like you to contemplate. Where is your life imperfect right now? And if imperfect doesn't seem to be the right word, I love the word mess. There's a lot of places where my life feels messy. Let me read through this. But what are the situations, relationships, feelings, places where your life feels messy, painful, maybe unresolved, hard, uncertain? And it could be with you and another person. It could be with you and yourself. It could be with you and your work. It could be with you and your most beloved people. It could be with you and your health. It could be with you and your money. But just jot down some places in your life where life really feels a little bit messy. Uncertain, painful, unresolved. Okay, everybody have a little something to work with? I'm going to give you a few minutes because we're not in a hurry here. And what I'd like you to do is pick one or two of those situations. And I'd like you to ask yourself the question, how could you begin to bring grace into that situation? To bring goodness to that situation? To that person, maybe most especially to yourself. We talked a little bit yesterday about our inner dialogue and some of the stories we tell ourselves. How could you bring grace into that situation? What are some things that you could begin to do that would bring goodness to that situation? And I would be sure to include yourself.
Specific examples?
Sure. Like something that I could, yeah, I do have a specific example that I could share with you. I have a couple of daughters. My oldest daughter right now is really on a faith journey that one, she needs to go on, and two, knowing her as well as I do, I think that she is sacrificing a lot of who she is to be committed to this particular congregation, to some of the beliefs that they have, and extending grace to her is really giving her the latitude to do that and understanding that it's her journey and not trying to interfere. Giving grace to myself is to stop saying, you know, you must have really blown it somewhere because she's having to do this, and to recognize that that, you know, I adored her and did the best that I could, and I haven't caused this. I'm just having to let her be. So for me, that's right now, that's a real practice in grace for me. Tom and I had to have a little practice in grace at dinner tonight. We were talking about tomorrow. He said, we're going hiking. And I said, well, let's come back. We're teaching at 10:50. I said, let's come and make our lunch and go on the hike. And he said, I don't want to do that. That's too hard. He goes, I'm going to come back here and eat. I looked at him. I said, well, I feel as strongly about that as you do, right? So we're in the midst of it, right? About a sandwich for him. And so I finally said, okay, so whatever. It's so fine with me. And if you don't know this about my husband, food matters to him. He really likes his food. And so he says to Will, Wes Willis Hart, he says, so Will, what's for lunch tomorrow? What do you think lunch is tomorrow?
Rice.
Tom says, I think a sandwich sounds
good. Oh, yeah.
But no, we both kind of have to look at each other and say, you know, if that's more important to you, fine. We're talking about a sandwich here. I don't need to hang on to this. And so grace happens in little tiny things. Grace happens in great big things. So did anybody, I don't ever want anybody to, feel on the spot, but does anybody have an example that they'd be willing to let us in on? A place where your life is messy, how would you like to bring more grace into that mess? Anybody have anything they're willing to tell us?
I can share kind of a moment that I have we have two boys, and we took a long walk today, the Heart Lake, and my younger son is just boy, talks all the time, has a running commentary of everything. And anyway, he kind of can get people all, he can get my son mad, he can get me mad. I didn't know I had a bad temper until, he taught it to me. And anyway, as we're going along, we're having fun, but all of a sudden, and I feel like it was kind of from God, it's a privilege. It should be a, as hard as it.
Yeah.
That it was a gift to me, that I was chosen. Mm-hmm. So.
Thank you. I think that's a beautiful picture of grace filling in the gap, which doesn't mean it's easy. It can be so hard. And I think it's interesting, this exercise, in fact, all the exercises in this particular kind of thought exercises are ones that people find challenging, and I think that this is stuff we need to be thinking about. Our days, especially when you, if you're a visitor here, when this is your regular life, it's a little bit different, but when you're a visitor here, our days here are different than when we go back. And it's easy to get so involved in our days that we never stop in the moments to say, am I living with grace here, or am I just going through the motions, or am I spinning a story about this person, this situation that doesn't really have anything to do with goodness? It's a story that I'm telling myself. And we are here to, we are really God's, we're God's hands and arms and eyes and hearts and voices, and we are either extending goodness and accepting goodness, or we're not. And none of us get it perfectly, but I think it's really good to think about on a daily basis, how can I live with more grace in every aspect of my life? And I think that's a beautiful picture that we can all relate to. In some form or another, we all have stuff that's hard. And it's a privilege that God's trusted us with whatever that thing is that can be really hard. Anybody else? Okay. All right, so here's another quote. Life is nothing but a series of moments. Start living the moments and the years will take care of themselves. And I always think it's funny that we have anything different than living a moment at a time, but I convince myself that I do. And it's true, life happens a moment at a time, and the truth is we never know how many moments we're gonna have. It can change in absolutely the next heartbeat. And it's easy to miss the moment because we're too busy putting one foot in front of the other, checking off our to-do list. Probably the person, and I'm gonna talk about her for a little while because I think we learn through stories, but probably the person who taught me the very most about grace was my mom. She really colored her life with grace. She's no longer here. She left us in 2000. But I'm just gonna tell you starting that process. So her name was Ashby. Mom's name was Ashby. I'll tell you that her name was Ashby and my dad's name was Plank. That was a lot to grow up with. Bill, Mary, I had Ashby and Clank. Okay. So her name was Ashby, and she knew what it meant to extend goodness. Her world was anything but perfect, and yet she just knew how to extend goodness. And her imperfect world was colored and connected by grace. She was about this tall, and she was just, I would call her like the classic example of a lady. She was the kind of person who got up every morning and it mattered to her to put a little makeup on and a little jewelry. And at the end of the day, it mattered to her that she took a few moments to welcome my dad home. She kind of created a celebration around his time coming home. And I think yesterday I mentioned that she parented with grace. My first wedding was this, you know, expensive, lavishly planned thing, and I ended up going through with it, but shouldn't have. And about 2 weeks before the wedding, she came up, and just with all the gentleness in the world, just said, "Honey, we don't have to do this. We can call this whole thing off." And I couldn't accept the gift of grace that she was extending to me. She was also somebody who saw the goodness in any situation. I can remember when I was a single mom for a while, and we were going to this church tea, and I had decided it was time for me to kind of be the grown-up in the situation, so I agreed to hostess the table, which meant that I was supposed to bring the china, the table settings, and all of that. And so I showed up at the church, and all the up-and-coming and already arrived were there as well. And so I'm starting to get out my things to put them on the table, and I know I'm in trouble when I look around and all the other tables have beautiful linen starched tablecloths and silver candelabras and vases of roses, and I have this little ceramic vase with a bunch of spring tulips. When I set them down on the table, every tulip fell on the table. Every single one, just stems. It was a little vase of stems. And I wanted to run and hide, and Ashby, without missing a beat, says, "Honey, we'll just whimsically scatter them around the table." I thought, okay, I can stay here. And so we did. We whimsically scattered the tulip, you know, things around the table. And so as my mom, well, the other thing I want to say about her is that there was nothing that she liked more than what she liked to call a good visit. And it's literally in her diary. Margie stopped by for a good visit. And a good visit for her, if you stopped by her house, whatever task was at hand would be set aside for a nice cup of coffee, you know, beautiful china, but more than anything, her time. She did not know how to multitask. She absolutely didn't. She would sit down, she'd look you in the eye, she'd ask you questions, she'd listen to your answers, and she just relished the time together. I'd call her a couple days later and she'd say, "Oh, honey, that was just the best visit." And she extended that to her grandkids. All of the kids had what they loved to call Mamie Days, and that's what they called her. So a Mamie Day was the day that you got to spend the entire day with her, doing whatever you wanted, eating whatever kind of food you wanted. There was nothing else on her agenda. And so my daughter Lauren, who was about 5 at the time, shares her name, her middle name is Ashby, was having a Mamie Day. Well, I had a long day at work, it was winter, so by the time I got there about 6 o'clock at night, it was dark, and I could see in, but they couldn't see out. And Lauren loved to organize things, and so I look in, and my mom and Lauren are dressed in matching aprons, and they have reorganized my mom's entire kitchen cupboards by color. So you open up one cupboard and it's flour, salt, all the white dishes. Another one, ketchup, raspberry jam, all the pink dishes. Entire kitchen. And I can remember going in and saying, "Mom, this is going to take you all day to, you know, take this apart." And she just looked at me and she said, "Honey, I would not trade this or anything," she said, "and I'm probably going to get to do it again." So her health started to fade, and as much as I loved my mom and as much grace as she extended, there were also things that I still kind of wanted to work out with her, that I wanted to understand. So I was seeing this therapist, and I was explaining to her, you know, I said, "My mom is fading, and the mom that I knew last week, I don't know her this week, and how am I going to get these questions answered?" And she got really quiet and she said, "You know," she said, "I think your mom's greatest lesson is still to come. You need to pay attention." And I can remember driving away from there thinking, how is her greatest lesson still to come? She doesn't remember like she used to. She's not as connected. Well, about 3 years later, I get this call from my brother, and my mom was in the hospital again. And I could just tell by his voice that this was different. And so as I'm going to the hospital and I walk into the room and I take one look at my mom and I thought, okay, this is different. The first thing I thought of was this therapist 3 years later. And I thought, I need to pay attention because the lesson is now. And so we decided to take her home. My folks were married for 60 years, and they had wanted, they'd stayed in their home, and so we arranged for her to go home, and we lived in this little kind of suburb of Portland, and it was this beautiful sunny day, and I'd left ahead of time, and I was getting gas or something, and the ambulance goes by, and I can remember thinking, Mom's going home for a last good visit. So we get her home, we tuck her in, and it was the most amazing thing. For the next about 4 days, I realized that I was not the only one who had had a good visit with her. The house was filled from morning till night with people coming in having this last good visit. And she couldn't really talk anymore, and it didn't matter. They would sit on her bed, they'd tell stories, they'd sing songs. We had this one guy who I swear was an angel, because every night he'd come by with a bottle of wine and a guitar. And we'd have a glass of wine, he'd sing. And this one day, and what I realized in watching her is that she was reaping this lifetime of choices that she'd made to extend goodness into other people's lives. And this one day, my oldest brother is he's 13 years older than I am, and he kind of looks like a mountain man. I used to say he looks like the Unabomber, but he's not. He's very nice. And his unkept look always bugged me. He's a veterinarian, and his unkept look always bugged my mom. And so we're standing around her bed, me and my siblings. So it's just the four of us, and we're doing that thing that we do at the end of somebody's life. We're telling stories, we're laughing. And I have no idea what possessed me to do this, but I take Peter's hand and I put it in my mom's. And I say, Mom, do you think that Peter should cut his hair? And she looks at him and she goes, mm-hmm. Do you think he should trim his beard? Mm-hmm. And I just looked at him, I said, I dare you to ignore her request. to her memorial service a week later, and my brother walks in with his cowboy boots and his belt, his bolo tie, and his hair is pulled really neatly back. And remember, he's a veterinarian, and his beard is so nicely trimmed. I said, Peter, thank you so much. You went to the barber. He goes, nope, I went to the dog grooming parlor. And so my mom, you know, passed away this night. We were all with her, and I don't know how she did it, but she made it easy on us. She extended goodness all the way to her last breath. And for whatever reason, my dad had wanted to have, they decided to have an open casket. And so I thought, you know, I just don't think I can let Mom go and have the people in one of the funeral homes take care of her. I think I'm gonna do that. So I called this friend of hers who had done her hair for years. And I said, Cindy, I've got this thing I wanna ask you. She said, I will be there. I can't even tell you what it was like. We walked into the funeral home, and it was cold, and they had that weird music playing, and, you know, all that. And I walked into this little room, and there was my mom, and here comes Cindy, and we spent the next 2 hours putting on her makeup, getting her dressed, telling stories, and again, she's gone. And because of who she was, she's brought goodness into this little cold room, sitting there putting her makeup on. And so we go to the church. It was filled with a lot of people. And her grandchildren, who just adored her, she really was the heart of our family. We had said to them, you know, we prepared them. They were all pretty young. This is going to be an open casket, and so it's totally up to you guys. You can go see her, you can not, whatever you want to do. And so we get done with the service, and I turn around, and all the grandkids are sitting here, and they're all sitting there. They've got their arms around each other, and they're, you know, hugging and crying and everything. So I'm busy talking to people, and I look around, and there they all are gathered around her, and unbeknownst to us, every one of them had brought something to send with her. You know, a little something, a little squirrel, a little seashell, a something that reminded them of her. And again, they weren't afraid, and it was, from my perspective, it was because she had made this choice time and again to extend goodness into the lives of everybody else and herself. So as I stood there, I thought, you know, this is really her lesson. This is what I was supposed to learn. And I kind of, and going back to her home, one of the things I found, she had this little, you probably heard this quote, she had this magnet on her refrigerator, and it says, yesterday is history, tomorrow's a mystery, today is a gift, that's why we call it the present. Okay, this cute little saying, but that's how she lived life. So what was it that I learned? And I think it was that when she passed away, I got to go to the end of her life and look back on my own and ask myself the question, between here and whatever that end is for me, how can I fill it with more grace? And it was a very interesting year because my dad, they'd been married for 60 years, and man, the minute she was gone, he said, I'm going to. I want to see Ashby, and I want to see Jesus, and I want to do it now. And my dad was a much more complicated guy, and so she went one way, and he kind of went another. He kind of kicked and clawed his way out. And it wasn't that he didn't experience grace, but he had a really hard time with it. And so again, you know, I think what she understood is that life is really a series of choices and moments, and each of those choices and moments add up to a lifetime. And so I guess my question for all of us today is, how can we live our life with more grace, a choice at a time? So we are the accumulation of our choices and experiences. And this next exercise is pretty introspective, and somehow or other, it's just very connected to grace. And so every stage of our lives come with incredible lessons. There's something to learn in every chapter. And if we don't get it in one chapter, somehow it seems that life brings it around another way for us to learn in a later chapter. And I think that one, we have things to learn, and secondly, I believe that we've all been touched by grace throughout our lives. There's a lot of threads that hold our lives together. I think grace is one of them, whether we see it or whether we don't. And so we all have the benefit of three things. We have the benefit of hindsight, which gives us the ability to learn from our past. We can reflect on our mistakes and our victories. We can recall memories, things that had a significant impact on us and that influence who we are. So we really can learn from our past, and we experience grace in the past. The present allows us to have insight based on the here and now. And whatever it is we're learning right now, we'll never have the chance to learn it exactly this way again. So it's stuff to learn now. And then lastly, I believe there's the gift of foresight, which is what I really got with my mom. And that foresight encourages us to project ourselves down the road and ask ourselves, what kind of person do I want to be? What are the things that I want to guide my life? What do I want to accomplish? What do I want life to look like in the future? I've heard it said oftentimes, you begin with the end in mind. We all have the chance to kind of look down the road and say, when I get there, what do I want to be able to say is true? So, my hope is that tonight you'll have the chance to learn from what I believe is one of your best teachers, which is yourself. And so let me explain this exercise before you do anything with it. So you'll notice around the room, there's numbers posted all around the room here, right? These represent the ages of your life. Okay, so this is from your 1 to 12, your 55 to 69. So these are different chapters, different stages in your life, past, present, or future. And again, let me tell you, kind of go through this a little bit before I ask you to do anything else. What I'm going to ask you to do is to actually get up, and you can wander around the room, and I want you to visit a stage in your life, past, present, or future, that you would like to visit and learn from. And I'm going to give you some direction about how to do that. And so the first thing to do is to ask yourself, and I think you'll kind of know, as you wander around, I'm going to give you some questions that you're going to get to answer from that stage in your life. But you're going to have to get up, I'm sorry to say, but we all had a big dinner, so that's good. It'll be good to get up and move around. But find a stage that calls to you, past, present, or future, and then you are going to learn from yourself at that stage. So take a few minutes and find where you'd like to visit, past, present, or future. So for whatever reason, I think you've chosen this spot for a reason. So really trust that you're sitting there for all the right reasons. And don't overthink this exercise. Trust yourself. You're the only one who knows your life story and what it means. You really are. So the first thing I'd like you to do is just take a minute to get to this age. Close your eyes and just imagine this stage in your life. And see if you can get, think about, you know, what do you look like? What is life around you like? What are you wearing? Where do you live? To the best of your ability, let yourself become that age. Okay, I'm going to pass out some questions, and they're just divided into past, present, and future, so choose the appropriate one. And what I would say to you is these questions are a great starting point. What you're wanting to do is write to yourself from that age and talk to yourself today from that age. So I've given you some questions to get you started. There's a few more people, so I'm going to let you guys kind of share. You were all a little writing, and I was thinking several things, and I think our lives are absolutely held together by grace. Sometimes we see it, and sometimes we don't, I think. But they're held together by grace, that thread of grace. And I think something else that is very true is that we have the chance to strengthen that thread. We are surrounded daily with opportunities to choose grace. And I know for me, one of the hardest places to extend that grace is to myself. And so as we're thinking about grace and living with more grace, I would encourage all of us to look for ways to extend more grace to ourselves. Because as we do that, I believe it spills over to everybody else. And then, Jereen, you really said it. Tom and I are taking this great yoga class, and she's always talking about this idea of being able to hold two very different things at one time. And one is begin with the end in mind. So focusing on, you know, looking at the end of my life and how do I want it to look. Holding that right alongside of here I am right now in this present moment. And so I'm keeping that in mind and I'm staying in the present. And moment by moment, that grace is going to take us home. So thank you. Any other comments?
For me, I think it question is me wanting to be more honest with myself, and actually helped open up knowing what road I'm on and where my road is going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, being honest with yourself.
I don't know if it gives me timeline. Gave me stages of what I thought stages would be.
Anybody else? Well, so let's, I just love this. Let me just leave us with this quote one more time. Be content with what you have. Rejoice in the way things are. When you realize there is nothing lacking, the whole world belongs to you. So thank you. Thank you very much. Have an evening filled with grace. See if we can keep